Lake Effect continues on WUWM. I'm Mitch Teich. Last week, the Potawatomi tribe announced it's dropped the word bingo from its casino complex in Milwaukee, which will soon include a hotel. While gambling is a huge industry for several Native American tribes in Wisconsin, it was bingo that for years was at the heart of Indian gaming here, and its origins had relatively modest goals. A new book details the beginnings of Indian gaming back in the 1970s, The Bingo Queens of Oneida, How Two Moms Started Tribal Gaming in Wisconsin, sheds new light on the Green Bay Area tribe's first foray into the phenomenon. It's written by Mike Heft, a former reporter for the Green Bay Press-Gazette. Heft and Sandra Ninnem Bramer, one of the women he writes about, joined Lake Effect's Eleanor Peterson by phone, and Heft talked about his approach to the subject as a non-native writer.
Yeah, I kind of bring an outsider's perspective. I was born in Green Bay, raised in Kenosha. I got a job on the Green Bay Press-Gazette, and that's where I met Sandy's daughter, Patty. Patty and I married. She was a reporter. I was a copy editor. So I think I bring an outsider's perspective, but I've been a member of the Oneida community, you know, that extended community, for about 25 years. So I kind of drew on that, and as well as just contacts with Sandy. I sat down and wrote this story about Sandy and Elma. It's kind of told through their eyes of how they started bingo back in 1976. And then they put me in touch with other people, and Sandy said, "Hey, you got to talk to my son-in-law. He's going to contact you." And, you know, so it was like a family project.
But you're using your journalism background to help emphasize and bring out the details and the history of the bingo in Oneida, correct?
Yeah, very much. Yeah, I have to give credit to my wife, Patty, for the idea of writing the book. I came to learn that, you know, her and her brothers and sister, they all worked bingo from a young age, and I came to know that it played a formative role in their life, you know, growing up as kids working bingo. And I wasn't sure I could write the book, but my wife told me, "Well, you're trained as a journalist and you're Sandy's son-in-law, so you can do this." And that, you know, so I had that support at home, and that was critical to getting the book written. I think I had that support at home. So Patty's not here. We can blame her for this, right?
Well, that in a way plays into the two themes that stood out to me while I was reading the book. One of the themes was the powerful women in the Oneida tribe, but also the sense of community and family. Now, Sandy, you're not only just Mike's mother-in-law, but you're also one of the powerful women in the Oneida tribe and was named a bingo queen along with Alma Webster. Bingo was all operated mainly by the women because it was played by the women. But why did the Oneida tribe need to raise funds, and how did they settle upon bingo?
In the 70s, we got a new building called our Activity Center in downtown Oneida in one of the housing sites. And, you know, I became assistant director of that building along. Sonny King was the director, and he was very involved with the youth, very involved. And then I was assistant to him. And we got that building, but we really had no means to pay for the expenses of that building, such as the light utility bills, and then all the sports equipment that we needed for the youth. So Alma Webster was the treasurer at the time, and she played bingo at church. She had come from Michigan. She did that and thought, this is the way to do it. So she talked me into it. After, you know, we didn't do it immediately. It took us about a year or so to kind of research things and say, could we, should we, or whatever. And we finally, and then we had a hard time finding the supplies. We didn't have a bingo control number, which we thought we needed to have. And there was all those little hurdles we had to jump over. But we finally got it and went and had a game, and it helped pay those bills. And it was done by women because we were the ones, most of our men were working outside of the community. They are construction workers or steel workers, and we were home taking care of business, taking care of our families, and taking care of some of the tribal programs because that's what was available to us. So we started that game, and lo and behold, it just grew and grew. We were called the Bingo Queens by our chairman. Our chairman, Purcell Paulus, was chairman for 23 years, and we had his full support. And wherever he went and wherever we were, he always introduced us as his bingo queen. And that's one of the reasons that we named that book, the Bingo Queens of Oneida was because of what Percy did. I don't care where we were, if we were in Washington, D.C., or in some front of some big conference, you know, he'd introduce, when we had to speak, he'd introduce us as his Bingo Queens. And it took a lot of people, though, to help us with that. It wasn't just Elma and Sandy. It was the community. There was more women that were helping us. Irene Moore was instrumental in encouraging us to go ahead and do this. Go ahead, you girls, you know, she'd say. And so it was wonderful. And we did have a good time doing it, even never realizing what we were accomplishing. We just continued, and we had a good time with it, and we made lots of friends, and the whole community kind of was behind us through this whole thing.
Yeah, I would just add that, yeah, I think Sandy and Elmo were kind of the spark. You know, they got it ignited, but they couldn't have kept it going without, or even get it going without help from a lot of other people. You know, the tribal attorneys, and they did this as a tribal enterprise, and they did it as a nation, you know, with a tribal ordinance. And one of the dramatic turning points, I think, in the book hinges on some conflict with the state. Sandy was telling me how they were threatened with getting arrested because it wasn't clear in the law if tribes could operate outside state law. So I won't tell you what happens. You know, there was this threat to shut down the bingo hall, make arrests. But you have to read the book to find out what happened.
It was interesting for me to learn about the living conditions that were in Oneida and in the on the reservation, because I have actually never been to a reservation. And the way that Mike described the ways that there was the houses that didn't have plumbing until 1953, and just kind of like it seemed to be a little more destitute. And these monies and these funds were going to help build up the community. Is that correct?
Right. It did. We didn't. There was many homes that didn't have inside facilities at the time, even electricity in some cases. So, and a lot of our men got laid off. They right around Thanksgiving. I can remember that. So with us starting this bingo operation, we start funneling that money after a couple of years back into the tribal structure. So that started to help pay a lot of bills and provide a lot of services to the tribe. We got professional about it after a while. We knew what we wanted to do, and we just continued to do it.
Because the funds that you raised were growing almost exponentially from within 3 years.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. It was just amazing, and it was crazy because we had so many friends. We just had so many friends. And for the first months of having bingo, there were a lot of people outside, tribal people, who were not comfortable in coming on the reservation. Or let me say, they didn't think they were welcome. So we did a lot of advertising. I had the kids go and put flyers out on cars at the flea markets or at the Christmas bazaars at the different churches. I'd have them put a flyer out. I remember my daughter and Elma's son, they'd have to go out. They'd mumble about it, but they would go and take some kids along with them, and they'd go and they'd put these flyers out so we could get people to come out, and they were welcomed. And once we got to know them and made friends, we made some wonderful friends over the years. And then we had more women that started to help us. I mean, we had Lillian King, we had Kate Stevens, Pat Masekin, Darlene Denny. There was a lot of people that started to help us, you know. And then our community supported it. I mean, they supported it by coming and playing, mm-hmm. and playing regularly, you know. And we had people from the Menominee Nation come and play. So, yes, it was a wonderful time.
At the same time, you actually did face some opposition from the inside and outside of the reservation for having the bingo games. What were their concerns?
Well, that building was built. It had like 8 offices, and it had a gym and a library, small laundromat. But the gym was for the young people. And that was, I was fine for a while when we only played one night out of a week. But and I can't remember exactly the timetable when the game started to increase, where we went to 2 games, to 3 games, you know, for 2 games on Sunday, and what that meant to the young people. And those people that had basketball and loved basketball and practicing, you know, stuff like that, well, they couldn't use the gym, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they got very upset with us. If they came to us, though, and they had a big tournament, say, for the weekend, we would cancel. But not really often, you know. They always tried to find another place to play. We pretty much took over that gym on the young people there for many years. But then we paid for the basketballs and all of the other baseballs and bats and things like that, too, you know. Sonny King, of course, was a liaison on our committee, and he was very instrumental in helping us realize that, you know, what we had to do. So, and he was just a really good guy to help us with everything.
And we could see that there are just some really key oppositions that have a change of mindset, especially one teenage boy.
Yes, Ernie. He's a very good friend to this day. Very good friend.
Yeah, explain a little about the confrontation that you had with Ernie in a hallway.
With Ernie? Remember? Right in front of the trophy case that we had there. And he was upset because they wanted to play basketball, and there was, you know, these ladies having bingo in there and taking it over, and him and I had a few words over that. Of course, he was a tall kid. He still is a very tall man, and he was a very tall young man. And I'm standing there in front of him looking up at him, and, you know, and we went at it with a few choice words. But then later on, Elma talked to him, you know, and said that without that, there wouldn't be a light, you know, they couldn't play basketball in there because the lights wouldn't be on. So he soon came to realize, and he was on our side, and he's been a strong supporter of ours ever since those days. Ever since those days, he's been at our side.
And yeah. as Mike wrote in the book, that you gave him a verbal spanking.
Yes, I suppose you'd call it that, yes.
Yeah. When Ernie mentioned that to me in the interview, he said, yeah, Sandy put me over her knee a couple of times. And I kind of chuckled because as her son-in-law, I sort of know what he meant. And he goes, yeah, you know what I mean, don't you? Yeah. So you don't want to get on the wrong side of Sandy, you know.
I served with him, too, on the business committee for 9 years, six years, I think, he served. And then he went off and went and did his own thing. But it was nice having him on board. He's got a good mind and a good heart.
Yeah. And now Ernie is the chairman of NIGA, National Indian Gaming Association. So he's the chief spokesman for NIGA.
Good. So he became a leader.
He went from being a gaming opponent to its biggest advocate.
Right. And not just for Oneida, for all tribes.
So let's switch gears just a little bit, because when I was reading about the Oneida history, I did find that there was a long sense of community that reaches back to centuries, even to the Patriots. And it was fascinating for me to learn that the Oneida have a history with George Washington at Valley Forge.
Yeah. I was talking to Loretta Matoxin, who's the Oneida tribal historian, and she gives a good explanation about back then the Oneidas, you know, one of the Iroquois nations, they tried to stay neutral with all of the Europeans that were coming in at that time in upstate New York, and it was hard to stay neutral because if you started trading with the English, you got to be an enemy of the French, for example. Finally, they had to take sides, and they sided with the colonists, partly because of a Episcopalian, and I think that was a big part of their heritage was, you know, that they took a stand to go with these colonists who were fighting for independence. And I know to this day, like you'll see the letterheads on Oneida stationery that talk about Polly Cooper, who was an Oneida woman who brought corn to share with the soldiers at Valley Forge. And there's some really neat history that Oneidas are proud of, I know.
Were their efforts acknowledged and reciprocated by, you know, cooperating with them and helping them out as opposed to fighting them?
Yeah, and they were welcomed in as, you know, like captains in the Continental Army, and I think after the war they were given, you know, they're to be secure in their lands. But with development pressures in upstate New York, the New York State officials made some illegal land deals that disenfranchised the Oneidas, and they didn't have any more lands, and they were just kind of forced to come west. So here you have this tribe that's not native to Wisconsin. There's 11 tribes in Wisconsin, but Oneida was transplanted. And I think, you know, talking to Loretta Matoxin, you just go, how incredible that must have been to as a people, as a community, to have survived a trip where pick up and move cross country, and then how do you put down roots and make a good community here in a new place? I just think that's quite a story of survival.
Well, thank you to Mike Heft and Sandy Ninham Bramer for joining us on Lake Effect. So thank you for being here.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Thank you so much for asking us.
Mike Heft is the author of The Bingo Queens of Oneida, How Two Moms Started Tribal Gaming in Wisconsin, published by the Wisconsin Historical Society Press. Sandy Ninham Bramer is one of the founders of the Oneida Tribe's Bingo Parlor back in the 1970s. They spoke with Lake Effect's Eleanor Peterson, and if you're going to be heading west of here, you can meet them at an event at the Reader's Loft in Belleville, Wisconsin on Thursday. One last break, and then we'll hear the work of a man whose mission is to preserve the shrinking number of quiet places in this country. This is Lake Effect from Milwaukee Public Radio.